Welcome, welcome to Paradigm Shifters. This is Veronica Entwistle, and I'm with my good friend and amazing paradigm shifter himself, Randy Masters. Welcome, Randy.
Thank you, Veronica.
Here we are talking about the music of the spheres. Randy is an aficionado. Randy is a, it says here maestro, I like that word actually, of the singing universe. Randy understands music and color and vibration in such a way that he's going to take us on a little bit of a tour understanding the music of the universe and some of the vibrational influences of the amazing tools that you create. Is that right, Randy?
Absolutely.
So tell us what it means, music of the spheres, universal music. What is that?
Well, just know for the listeners out there, and hello, listeners, that I come out of being a composer, a professional composer and musician most of my life since I was a very young child. And so my approach to many things, to science, healing, and is to come from a musical perspective. So even though I have other backgrounds, my heavy musical background is what's really firm in my field, so I'm expressing that. So, but that doesn't mean that when I say music of the spheres, that I am only talking about music, because in that, it's the vibratory field of the entire unified field of creation.
Wow.
And everything is vibrating. Nothing is at a standstill. Not one single atom is standing still. As they said, if it did, the universe would blow apart if even one atom stood still. That's interesting to think. And they all give off sound, and they form together in molecules and in different packages in geometric shapes with angles and shape, and they also give off different kinds of colors. So we have form, sound, and color as intricate parts. When I'm saying music of the spheres, even if somebody doesn't hear the music, does not mean that that music isn't present. In other words, they maybe they'll see a color if they're clairvoyant or if they're able to see colors in some way. Somebody else might hear sounds, and somebody else might see or feel shapes as their way into experiencing the music of the spheres. Most people, when they talk about that, are, you know, certainly thinking music first above all else. But I also want to include the fact that there's these different vibratory rates and combinations, and some of those combinations will produce shapes, and some of the combinations will be, for some people, completely an auditory experience. And for other people, they may see all of these things. They may see color, sound, and shape all going on. And this is primarily what the mystics were talking about over the years when they used the phrase, especially attributed to Pythagoras, music of the spheres. In fact, it's even said that he could distinguish 40,000 separate chords and that he had identified in what he heard in the music of the spheres.
Wow, and he could hear them because he was extremely gifted.
He was more than gifted. It's hard to imagine what kind of a being he truly was and what faculties that he had developed and that he had access to know what he's hearing and what he's seeing and how to talk about it, how to log it, how to teach it, and all of that.
Can you hear music? I mean, can you also hear as much as he or some of what he could hear?
I have no idea the capacity that he heard. I've had experiences. I've heard different things. I've seen things. I've felt things. I've had, you know, some total light experiences where my entire physical body turned into light, several different experiences. And
what triggered that?
What was that?
What would trigger that?
What would trigger? Well,
simple question, right?
One time it just happened that I just happened to walk in the house during a workshop, and one of the people in the workshop, a very dear friend of mine, and I both saw our entire light bodies standing there in the room. I don't know how it happened. I was amazed that it happened. I had gone for a really long run that day, the longest run I'd ever done, and I was in quite a expanded consciousness. But it wasn't something that was only my experience. It was two different people at the same time seeing this. So I was getting a confirmation and knew that I wasn't some type of a hallucination or a projection on my part. Mm-hmm. Another time I was receiving body work from one of my mentor teachers who passed away the day after 9/11, Bob Rasmussen, working with the blue light that's in the nucleus of the cells in the body, which you can see in an electron microscope in all living matter. There's this electric blue white down in the cells. And he was working to ignite that light in me for some healing challenges I was having. I had several friends there in the room, And all of a sudden, I completely turned into that blue-white light. Everything was united. All the senses. That my first impression in the wow of it was that all the senses were unified. There was no distinction between any of the senses. It was just a huge isness.
Wow.
And then as I began to want to focus, or a thought would come to me, whatever I would think of, I would instantly get information on. So, you know, I didn't know how to sustain that kind of a field at that time. I hadn't studied the technique of how to breathe properly to do that field. But there is a breathing technique that is part of this.
What is it?
Well, basically, and this is a safe technique for people to use, and I even do it under lots of circumstances because it makes me extremely aware. You breathe in through your nose to the count of five, and you exhale through your mouth to the count of 30. And when you exhale, you slightly purse your lips like you're going to whistle to create a little bit of resistance. So you inhale to the count of five through their nose, and then you exhale through your mouth to the count of 30, which is a 6-to-1 ratio. And everybody needs to find what rate they're comfortable with. I mean, what is the rhythm of their breathing? Is it a fast, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or slow? And where I was a trumpet player, I had a lot of breath control, so I can do all kinds of different breathing that maybe people who don't play a wind instrument might not have a control of their breath.
Incidentally, I'm going to interrupt you here for a minute because that was Randy on the trumpet who introduced this show. We ran the music of Randy's Pan American Suite.
Yeah.
And that was Randy with his breathing exercise.
Yeah. Well, I was using that when I played the trumpet and other instruments where I'm doing, when I can, I would get that kind of energy going through doing breathing, like when I would warm up before a concert. Or on my way to the concert, I'd be doing that breathing. So when it came time to play, it had a huge impact on my trumpet playing because I was able to play in the really high register by working off of that energy field rather than the normal effort it takes for trumpet players to play that way.
Going back to the breathing and the kind of experiences you're having, can everybody learn how to do that, to tap into what we would, let's just call it the music of the spheres? Can we tap into a greater understanding of that which is around us in many different ways? Will everybody be able to do that?
I believe so. I would think that the only thing that would maybe hold that experience back from people would be conditioning and belief systems, judgments, attitudes, fears, that what would happen if they did that. Because a lot of people share these experiences with friends or people and don't always get a happy response back. And so some people then close down. And a lot of people tend to keep these kinds of experiences very private out of fear of being judged, being, you know.
So it's the old arsenal of stuff that keeps us secure, right?
All of that stuff, you know, which is the past that we have to die to in order to be reborn into the kind of light beings that we were, that is our birthright to become and to realize in the world, if you would.
Now, I'd like to jump from light beings, that wonderful expression which I hold so dear to my heart too, is you're involved with so many things, but we're talking about light beings, now pyramids. Can you jump into that subject?
Into pyramids?
Yes, and the whole Egyptian. I don't need to say very much. You know lots about it, but there's such a connection to what you're saying and pyramid shapes and pyramid experiences, right?
Well, I'm not sure what particular aspects of the pyramid and the pyramids that you're most interested in, but certain types of pyramids.
That which represents, for example, connection to the universal music or greater consciousness, or I'm interested in all of it, but I just think it's a nice connector to greater power, isn't it?
Yes. Well, the strongest pyramid on our planet so far identified that is known in the world is the Giza pyramid, the large pyramid of Giza, because of the particular angles that it has, and its location on the planet is at the maximum longitudinal and equatorial circumference. Where those two cross, the Giza pyramid is right in the middle, so it's actually the center of the world grid because of that. And all of the longitudes and latitudes in the ancient grid were all keyed off of that pyramid, not Greenwich, England, which is false and throws off the understanding of the grid mathematics. So
tell us a tiny bit about the grid thumbnail.
Well, basically, it's a field that's created so that life can flow in a different way. The key is field and flow. And certain geometric shapes and their placement and their materials and their orientation, their consciousness, their intent, their construction, their materials, their alignment, create, summon up energy fields, coordinate energy fields, spark energy fields, and it creates this grid matrix all over the planet that then allows for the planet to behave in a different way, for climate to behave in a different way, for humans and other life forms to behave differently because of this nurturing grid that supports life. It's like a matrix. And, of course, the ancient grid has had problems in that many pyramids have been destroyed or harmed through all natural and not-so-natural situations. And it's poked some holes in it, and it needs some repair. And then I've been hearing a lot from people about how there is a new grid being constructed. Of course, there would be some way that the new grid would need to talk to the older grid. So the mathematics of the placement of sacred sites in the world is very intricate. If you looked at it from, let's say, a satellite down on the Earth, many of the patterns that you would see on the Earth are exactly the same geometries as the stars in the sky. They exactly mirror that. Like the three main pyramids at Giza mirror the belt of Orion, with the main Giza pyramid right, being right in the middle. The same angles and placement. It's what's called, there's a book on this that's called the Star Mirror. So what was happening in terms of mirroring heavens on Earth, as above, so below, was building pyramid structures on Earth and placing them around the Earth, mirroring when you observe the heavens, and then also evoking the energies of those star systems at those sacred sites.
To
so
fuel
that
the grid.
There's a bigger field that's created by the invocation of those stars that still holds up today. In other words, some of them hasn't broken down fully.
Okay, so that the star, they create the grid too? They are part of holding the grid, is that it?
Yeah, part of what's in the grid are qualities. And certain qualities are evoked, conjured up, amplified, focused, broadcast, all those different terms by what the intent is and what they're aligned with and certain specifics. And different stars in the starlight and their placement in the heavens carry specific qualities. So when you align a temple, if you know what star systems you need to align with by the functioning of that temple and what that temple is designed to do, there are ways to invoke the energies of the stars so that the temple actually is bigger than it is on Earth. It actually extends all the way out to that star system.
Excellent.
Maybe beyond, but for this part of the discussion at least, it connects with the stars, and the qualities of that star system are in the particle field at that site. They're like a radio, like in a way the pyramids and other structures are acting like radio antenna, and they're picking up the starlight, and then they can distribute it through the grid or at that location, or they can continue to broadcast it. So what they're doing is they're fine-tuning, like radio stations all over the cosmos, these special qualities that involve light, intelligence, and higher forms than what we had observed through a telescope, for instance.
So who set it up?
I believe very advanced beings, some physical and some non-physical, coordinating both people who are here on the Earth in 3D form and higher dimensional beings who can coordinate those things and oversee it to make sure that the proper alignments, proper intention, and everything is dealt with. And there are different star systems, such as Sirius and the Pleiades and Ursa Major, which is coming out of the Milky Way in the center of the galaxy, is a very big one, the Bear. Of course, Orion, there's a lot of different star systems, and when you start looking into this, it's very interesting which temples are aligned with which stars and planets as well.
So it's a universal organization. It's not just one star system and this the number of pyramids or whatever. The whole thing goes together, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very important that it is that larger thing. And there's certain qualities, such as the qualities of gold in the spiritual realms that Ibrahim Karim talks about in his biogeometry, there's certain numbers that resonate with that, and those numbers are built into the measurements and into the structures and the pyramids. And then there's certain types of violet energy that has to do with the angelic kingdom that's invoked, and certain types of earth energies and celestial energies that are combined together to create enormous amounts of both power and healing. I mean, they really could, they had all the energy that they needed in the ancient times by the way that they worked these pyramids. And also, to go back to your original question about the pyramids, the Giza pyramid is actually also a model of the hydrogen atom and also of carbon.
Okay.
And because of that, it can talk to all living forms that are carbon-based life forms. And that's something that's very special about the angles and the dimensioning of the Giza pyramid.
So I'm taking a few notes here, Randy.
So musical can, notes?
So what? So when you're talking about the angles, that you're talking about the angles of the pyramid itself, and that carries the message from the star system, does it?
It's part of the alignment. Remember, angles and angels, those two words are related together.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and because you change the angle, you change your perception, you bend light. And the bending of light and the focusing of light is part of the secret of the angles of the pyramids. And other sacred sites that aren't pyramidal as well. Angles are part of shape. They're intricately linked to the power of shape. Mm-hmm. And that phrase is very important, I think, for listeners to focus on, the idea of the power of shape. Because it is that shape power that harnesses and focuses and holds energies and performs its various functions, the same as in our body. All of the organs in our body wouldn't function properly if they were misshapen.
Right.
You know, a liver, if it's not the right shape, will not function properly, even if it's made out of liver material. So shape resonance is absolutely a key to the understanding of how the universe works.
Okay.
Everything is the shape that it is for a reason. For its functioning and its intelligence and how it serves life, it's not happenstance that it's the shape that it is.
Right. Well, I'm jumping to another thing. As you're a healer, I know that amongst all the other things that you do. And do you recommend, for example, when you're talking about these connections with the stars and the pyramids, do you recommend that people go and sit in those frequencies, sit in those angles, the angels?
You mean sit in some kind of a field that has those angles?
Yeah, to become...
To construct one themselves, or you mean like...
What do you recommend as a healer for people who want to advance their consciousness? There's nobody listening that isn't on some kind of evolutionary search and track, right?
Well, it can happen as simply as assuming different body postures, and just by changing the angle of your head intuitively. It's not like somebody's going to come up to you and measure it, although that's possible. But there's a lot of angles that are known and postures, and if you put yourself in the right postures, you can actually go into very advanced consciousness states. Felicitas Goodman, who was an archaeo-sociologist, I believe was her term, found these clay statues, and they were very old. And she put her own body into those postures, and when she did, she went into these various consciousness states.
Yeah, I've taken some of those classes. They're amazing, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's proving the point. And now, really what I'm saying here is everything we need is in our bodies. That's really the punchline.
Hmm.
We are the temple.
Mm-hmm.
All we have to do is wake it up, you know, give it the right kind of fuel, the right kind of nurturing, respect, love, and learn how to run the energies properly. Everything we need without any devices of any kind.
All right, well, I agree with that. However, you have some amazing devices, which...
Yeah, I have fun with them.
So let's move into the devices that we actually don't need, but... They do enhance the energy flows around us, and they certainly create what you would call resonant living.
Exactly. That's the name of my company, and that's why I chose that title, because these shapes in the environment trigger our memory of what they mean. And they're like training wheels. After a while, of course, we don't need them, but when they're there, we don't have to keep putting our mind attention on holding a certain field. You know, that can be given to certain objects that help hold and sustain and nurture that field.
Mm.
Field and flow. Create the right field, and life will flow differently.
Okay.
Really, that is another major bottom line about how the universe works, those two words.
field and flow.
Mm-hmm. The field has to be there first for the energies to flow properly, just like in a loving field that people create. They create that love field, and then their own energies and life forces and the vitality of who they are and their beingness can flow better and better based on the quality of the field that they create.
Okay, so that reminds me of me. Because I have a piece of jewelry that you created, and I feel like it it attracts a lot of attention, but I also feel more empowered while I'm wearing it. So this isn't just about self-aggrandizement. This is talking about the field and flow, which I have, thank you to you and to Bob. But I'd like you to talk a little bit about your jewelry and what, you know, what is it all about? It's wonderful stuff.
Well, a few of the examples that people can see is they look at the universalsong.net website. I have a few of the jewelry pieces, not everything that I've created, but some of them there, as I'm developing that website a little at a time.
And if any of you go in to look, the one I'm speaking about that I'm wearing is the Vesica Pisces, is called the Vesica Pisces one, isn't it?
And what's happening is the, when I design jewelry, I'm not making it. I have several wonderful award-winning cutters working for me who make the things for me. But I do design work and co-creative design work. Sometimes there's a team of several of us that do the design things. Basically, I'm using materials, and so there's the resonance of the materials, different metals and different stones, for instance, and they all have different qualities and give off different frequencies. Then there's the shape itself, and then there's the angles in the form. And like when I have things that are faceted, if somebody were to analyze them, they would find all kinds of different angles, that those angles are not random angles. I mean, you can put them there for beauty, but if you know what you're doing, you can actually tune the angles. And so that even
but
if you have a pyramid... go ahead.
They're also in accord with the star pyramid alignments in the grid that you were talking about?
Yes. And then I engrave symbols, earth-based and not earth-based symbols on the stones to impress a resonance into the field in the stone. And then the stone amplifies that, especially when I have any type of quartz, which is a wonderful amplifier. If I use quartz as one of the stones in the piece, then the quartz is both a transceiver. It's receiving and transmitting and amplifying. And then by engraving through a number of different engraving methods, different symbols, these symbols are also resonant shapes. And then the stone and its energy amplifies the symbol, and then that speaks to the particle field and creates this greater resonance. So, and then, of course, all of it has to work together to create beauty, because beauty creates certain spiritual qualities that are really wonderful. That's kind of the nature of beauty, the mystery of beauty, is how it invokes and summons up and broadcasts spiritual qualities. And so I use all of that knowledge, including, you know, different kind of combinations of stones, and there's also the astrological influences of different stones and how they relate to different star systems. Every single detail can be considered and consciously worked with and coordinated so that the synergy of all the parts work together, and that's what's really, really important.
So when people are wearing the jewelry, it enhances the field again, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. I even have chains that are tuned that are certain wavelengths as well, so that the length, assuming that it's going to sit on the person where it needs to, that one can take that to quite an extreme in terms of tuning chains as well.
Wow. Well, tell us about phiometry. Thank you about the jewelry. People should look at the website and check out the jewelry. It's amazing.
Thank you.
I love it.
The word phiometry was coined by my friend that I teach with a lot, who is a PhD in architecture and a extraordinary world scholar, Dr. Mohsen Hirmanish. He's a Persian architect. And why that word is used is because the unifying ratio in the universe that unifies all of life, all life forms, from the subatomic all the way up to what you see in the microscope to what you see in the telescope and beyond, is the phi ratio, the golden mean, which is basically 1.618:1 ratio, which in the music is a minor sixth interval, like a C up to an A flat, would produce that particular interval. And various spirals of that phi ratio, like you see it in the nautilus shell, and then the how many leaves to how many turns on the plants, and then the ratios of the planets. And that phi ratio is all over all of the living creatures. If you analyze everything from butterflies and fish and animals and human beings, and you look at the proportions of the different segments of the physical anatomy, it's completely loaded with phi ratios, phi squared, phi cubed, whatever, but they're all functions of that golden mean ratio. So we walk around as a temple radiating these ratios to life and to each other, so we're connected to the field by the very ratios that we're built with within a certain kind of acceptable variances within that, of course, that because of our individuality and genetics and other things.
It's interesting. I like that.
So phiometry is really saying the fractal-based reality of shape and form and special relationships, of which the golden of all the relationships, and it's nice that it's called the golden mean, is because of that phi ratio. And you get that in vortexes, and it's just everywhere.
Hmm.
It's omnipresent in the omnimorphic field, you know, the total universal life field, is pervasive with the unifying ratio of phi. And that's why it's been used and talked about so much and was used and used by a lot of painters in the proportions in their paintings and in buildings.
It's an innate understanding, isn't it, for people of a high sensitivity for beauty?
Yeah. The United Nations building is three golden rectangles stacked up on top of each other, sideways. And the Parthenon, every single rectangle in the Parthenon on the outside, windows, everything, are all phi ratios, just as an example for people to look at.
Hmm. Wonderful.
So that's where that term comes from. But that doesn't mean that everything in quote-unquote sacred geometry is only the phi ratio or derivatives of the phi ratio, because there's lots of other special ratios that are part of what gives shapes their unique resonances and their look and their angles and, you know, that type of thing.
So you're not so mystery school includes classes in phiometry?
Yes. Yeah, because that's the knowledge. I mean, I'm under Pythagoras' mystery school, basically, unless you knew about geometry, you couldn't go through the portal and enter the school. I mean, you needed to know music and mathematics and astronomy and geometry. That was called the quadrivium. Those four key subjects for that understanding. How does the universe work? How do the stars work? What are the celestial mechanics about? How do shapes work? How do number and the sacred science of number, which is not, unfortunately, a lot of things in the world have been left brain with math, and it's turned people off because they were not taught the math that the universe uses to create with in a loving way that would make them smile and feel that the creator of all that is loves them through numbers. And that's what I want people who are around me to feel, that the creator of all that is loving them, and that the numbers are not left brain, they're life-affirming number ratios, not just something in the one portion of the brain that you use to balance checkbooks and that kind of thing with.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well,
it's fun.
Yeah, really.
Big fun.
When's your next class?
P-H-U-N, that's what I call educated fun, P-H-U-N.
When's your next class?
September 1st and 2nd.
In Aptos?
In Aptos.
Hmm.
But right now that class has a waiting list that's completely filled.
So I guess
then
we have
we'll be doing another class coming up. I'll be doing one on the divine sacred feminine mysteries with Jan Sircone on the 1st and 2nd of December.
Oh, that sounds interesting. You want to talk about, I wanted to ask you more about tuning forks and so on, but do you want to move into the divine feminine, or do you want to talk a little bit about tuning forks?
Well, I haven't moved out of any of those categories, so it doesn't matter which one. They're all flowing.
They're
like
all
multiple
flowing
waterfalls that are all going on at the same time.
Well, I'd love you to talk a bit about the tuning forks, because all the way through your discussion is so, in some ways, so mammoth, so huge. In other ways, I can really feel it impacting the individual, which to me is really important.
Yes.
To wake us up, you know, to all we can be. So your tuning forks are really a magical tool. I'd like you to talk about that and maybe sound a few of them for us.
Okay. Here's one. Let me just sound it before I say something about it. This is, I'll play this one. Could you hear that?
Yeah, sure could. I could feel the energy of it, too.
Okay, now that note, through some, you know, esoteric research, and I can't prove this, was tuned to the wavelength of the human soul when it's running really high hyperdimensional energies.
Okay.
And the formula for it is the cube root of 2 pi times 100. So if you take 2 pi and multiply it by 2, and then take the cube root of that, which means the number that multiplied it by itself 3 times will produce the original number, and then multiply that by 100, you'll get the frequency there. That was 184.527 hertz. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting that's in that F-sharp realm, which is a realm that there's a lot of things in the universe that around that realm that are very magical. In terms of color, it also relates to the violet end of the spectrum. Now, I have tuning forks manufactured for me of a special aluminum alloy, and then it's put through a special polarization process, which makes the aluminum a very harmonious metal to work with, and has lots of overtones and harmonics that come off the forks. So I make both individual forks for people and also whole sets that are put together for different tuning systems, like if somebody wanted tuning forks to the ancient Egyptian tuning system, I do that, or India, or China, the Orient, any particular thing. I make them to different ratios in sacred geometry. I make them to sacred numbers, like gematria numbers, the science of alphabet, and number coordination. I make a lot of tuning forks that resonate to numbers, like the Kabbalah, all the numbers in the Tree of Life. I have a set that's based on the Kabbalistic numbers in the Tree of Life.
Hmm. How do they work on people? How do you heal with them or use them as a healing tool?
Well, first, I wouldn't necessarily say that I heal with them. What I do is I play the sounds in such a way that it triggers in people their own unique healing response, mm-hmm. and has them feel more linked up with Source or the Creator in them and awakens their own relationship to that. And it also helps clear blockages.
I was just going to say, it disperses thicker energies, doesn't it?
Yeah. And once those blockages get cleared, either, you know, with the physical body, like touching a fork to the body, or just sounding it in the room or sounding it around the body and clearing the aura, clearing the energetic bodies, once that smog comes out of their field, many things just naturally just straighten out. Not that the tuning fork straightened anything out. It's just that once you get the clutter out of the way, in other words, address the field, clean up the field, and the flow can then reflect more the kind of honoring flow of who people are, who they're intended to be. In other words, a more harmonious, healthy type of flow.
How do you pick for a person? How do you pick what?
A combination of knowing a lot about what things throughout history have been associated, like with parts of the body or organs or colors.
So you take a bit of a history on people before you work on them.
Well, I talk about things, you know, with people and interview, mm-hmm. and also I use my intuition and I use my other sight, mm-hmm. Where I've given impulses in what might work, and I ask questions, and I say, well, how do you feel this, and how do you feel this? And it might be 2 F-sharp notes, right, but they have a different frequency. And, I could demonstrate that in a really interesting way, I think.
That would be fun. I'd like that.
I have 2 notes here that are very, very close. I'm looking for them. And these 2 notes relate to the ratio in the Earth of the equatorial circumference to the polar circumference. One is 297 hertz, and the other is 296 hertz. So I'm going to play these 2 tuning forks. And what people would want to feel is, do they feel a different quality or a different resonant quality of some kind? So I'll play the lower frequency first, and then I'll play the higher frequency second.
Okay. We're ready.
Second fork now. So I struck each fork several times.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice a quality shift?
I did, actually. The second one hold on me. I started to expand my head quite a bit. That
well,
makes sense?
Yeah, there's a lot of things with these. You know, the second one had numbers 3 and 11 in it,
mm-hmm.
and the first fork had numbers such as 2 and 37, and the number 37 is one of the two most popular numbers in the sacred literature in both Hebrew, Greek, and English, the Bible and other sacred texts. It relates to various things around the Christed consciousness field.
37?
The number 37.
Hmm.
And in the pyramid, there's on the south wall, there's 37 blocks in the king's chamber, and there's 27 blocks on the north wall.
Hmm.
And that ratio, 37 over 27, is called the physical constant of hydrogen. So the Great Pyramid, in the gross looking at the number of blocks on the wall, is telling a story about the fundamental building block of matter, which is hydrogen.
Hmm.
Anyway, so these forks have, not only are they a number frequency of how many vibrations per second, or hertz, but they are also a number that has an interior number intelligence within it. So I break each number down into the numbers that are inside it, and that combination of numbers creates a special chord within itself of how those numbers combine like a family and produces this particular signature that number has. And then the numbers add up, like 2, 9, and 7 add up to 18, which breaks down to a 9.
Hmm.
And 2, 9, and 6, of course, is going to add up to a 17, which breaks down to an 8. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sort of. Well, it's kind of a lot for me to digest in a second.
Well, in other words, there's the amount of number, the frequency in cycles per second.
Mm-hmm.
That's only one communication. There's also the inner nature of the number that has internal numbers within it that, just like a molecule of a particular chemical, has additional elements that make up that chemistry.
So the internal numbers represent a part of the wavelength?
They're part of the chemistry or the alchemy, yes.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That makes that number unique, that has to do with what prime numbers are inside that number. So what I'm doing, I'm saying this, is I'm taking a number and I'm unlocking it. And one of the ways you unlock it is you look into the number to see what other numbers created it.
Hmm.
Like 33 is 3 times 11. So what part of what makes 33 interesting is it has prime number 3 and 11 multiplying, forming a special relationship. And then 3 plus 3 equals a 6. So the number 33 resonates with the number 6, which resonates with heaven and earth and the things in the universe that are about six, and sixness in the universe, the six-sidedness and so on, is a very important part of how geometry and form play out.
Is it similar to numerological? Is it the same system as the numerology?
It's beyond that. It's much deeper.
Okay.
A lot of numerologies don't go to the kind of depths that I'm suggesting here.
Right.
But some of them do, and some of them don't, depending on what they're wanting to achieve. What I'm looking at is a complete understanding of all the numbers involved in one of these sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you can sing to it and tone to it. I could play the tuning fork and somebody could hum to it.
And then you become the resonant chamber.
Yes, and then the sound will follow where your intention is. So you can sound a tuning fork, hum to it, and direct it like to your big toe, and then in your intention, the sound will go there.
Hmm.
You can sound them, you can move them around your body in geometric patterns. You can play combinations of notes at the same time. And if I wanted to, I could play 3 tuning forks that represent the dimensions of the Great Pyramid, half the base, the height, and the middle of the slope. Let me do that for a second. And you'll see a combination. Now, this creates a chord, okay?
But what can you tell me? What? Does that stimulate human consciousness to awaken?
Yes, it can.
Mm-hmm.
The right combinations can, because these notes add up to some summation notes and difference notes, and in other internal and external pulsations, they make chords that then, you know, if you didn't have a chord out of molecules, you wouldn't have a flower.
Right.
Or anything else.
That I understand.
Except for a single, you know, unit of something.
Okay, so let's play
it. Yeah, so here we go. Try this.
Isn't that NBC?
How's that grab you?
Wow.
I mean, I don't know how this is coming across because, you know, this is like majorly low-tech on this telephone. You know, and I don't know if these sounds are overdriving the speakers.
Well, I felt like I wanted, my heart was expanding and I wanted to cry. Not sad. I'm not sad. I'm not saying that, but there's an expansion about that.
Well, I think that's very important what you just said because that tendency, those kind of tears, I believe, are the soul tears that recognize there's something more profound happening and a certain level of the Creator's spark communicated to you through those sounds.
Hmm. That was wonderful. I loved it. And yes, the technology isn't so great, but maybe it doesn't matter because those real vibrations move through anything anyway. Even
well, there is the intent, but certainly quality of sound is very important.
Hmm.
A lot of people, if they don't have good speakers for their equipment, don't get to hear the qualities that are in a lot of the recordings. They may like the music and the rhythms and the melodies and the lyrics and arrangement, but they might not really get to hear the beauty of the tone qualities. And beauty of tone and timbre is based on the harmonic content of a given tone and certain harmonic proportions. And that is also part of sound healing, quality. And it's like a great cello player like Yo-Yo Ma has this amazing tone. He can play one note, and it's moving.
Mm.
But also I have a sense that what you might have also experienced in being moved, and you could feel that tear, it's that there is a deeper communication that got unlocked by playing that combination of tones that is talking about something in the universe. Let me play two of them together that have the golden mean, the two. Here they go. How did that feel?
Wonderful. It was throat. This one was throat and third eye, and it really pulsed.
And one of those frequencies I played was 1,000 hertz, and that's the frequency that Fred Bell says that the Palladian chips are tuned to.
Hmm.
When he analyzed the frequency of one of the Palladian chips in his sound equipment, the fundamental tone was 1,000 hertz.
Wow.
And so there's also, I just isolated one of those three forks, and that fork has a whole story in itself, you know, and that relates to the earth because there's a note with the earth, a fundamental brainwave of the earth that's a high octave of called the Schumann resonance.
Hmm. Is there something people can read, or do you have a CD of these particular tones that are explained, or of your, how can we do
I do get information to people that buy sets of tuning forks and the various workshops where I teach about sound.
Okay.
There, I have handout material. I haven't put it out in a book form yet. I'm mostly communicating in workshops on a need-to-know basis by people who are, you know, open and want to understand and care about this type of subject matter.
Well, I think you should give your website one more time.
It's www.universalsong.net, UniversalSong, universalsong.net. And I have some of this information on there. A few things, but the deeper information is more as people open up to that resonance, then it sort of that receptiveness draws the kind of information that they might best need.
Wonderful. Well, I'm very touched by those last two experiences. Thank you.
I could also play a note that is one of the notes that I think that the Stradivarius. Do I have that one here? Maybe I don't have that one here in front of me. I was just thinking of another deep tone that listeners might find very interesting. Here's a low one that's so you can hear this resonance and see what you resonate to with this note.
Okay.
Did you feel that?
Oh, boy, did I ever. But it was lower. I was in my belly and then straight up the body.
Well, one of the things that this note addresses is the solar plexus.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so it totally makes sense if you felt that.
Well, it moved right up my torso from my navel right up into the heart, and it seemed to pulse through. So that's pretty nice. I like that a lot.
Well, many of the gurus, once they discovered the sound current, from then on in their life, the main thing that they taught their students was about the sound current, how to connect with it, how to meditate with it. Basically, the sound current is the one that takes people all the way back to source. And it's very profound. They call it, you know, Nada Brahma, the world of sound.
Is it different for each person? I mean, like, what is the sound current? Can you...
Well, when you meditate on sound and focus through the third eye and connect in and imagine, you know, sometimes it can be more etheric, it can be imaginative. Some people, it's a fully audible sound. Others have to work with it for a while to connect and to hear. That's a little bit different than just listening to their own nervous system, which sometimes gets loud if they're stressed. But as you meditate and focus on that area and become aware of the presence of sound and you go with that sound and travel with that, it takes you out in the universe to greater and greater depths and deep within one's being and also deeply out in the universe as well. And mostly it's an inward current first. You go in to go out. And when you meditate on the sound current in that kind of way, you basically don't want to get off on any floor that, you know, there could be some phenomena that come, like going up an elevator, and the elevator could stop on any floor, and you could look out and get an idea of what's on that floor, and one can become fascinated. So what a lot of the ancients taught is to discipline their initiates so that they would keep on going and not just get off and be fascinated by one floor or one display.
The glamour.
And see how far they can go with that sound current.
Great.
And it's one of the most profound things. The universe is, to me, made from sound. In the beginning, the word was the word, and there's a lot of different translations about that. And I certainly feel that thought preceded the word, but certainly once we get to even talking about word, we're talking about evoking sound, and then light comes, and then light and sound work together. And so I feel that... in a lot of ways, sound has been very underestimated in terms of how truly profound it really, really is.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to try this. I'm going to do the sound current. What do you think of? Do you do that regularly?
Yeah. You can just close your eyes, for instance, and look up through the third eye area up in that region and focus and listen deeply and go inside and. Basically, first thing is quieting the external noise,
because
we're not talking about hearing passing traffic.
Mm-hmm.
But once one gets quiet enough, even with distracting traffic sounds and other sounds, and that could be in the house or anywhere, one can connect and hear things that you at first don't perceive are even in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing this outdoors and you're hearing birds and dogs and animals and the wind in the trees and so on, you can go deeper and deeper until you discover a sense of tone. The earth gives off different notes, and all the planets give off notes. And these ancient adepts, and some who today are trained like this, can hear the notes of different planets. I asked a sitar player, a friend of mine from India, you know, who had studied with Ali Akbar Khan. He says, well, why did Ali Akbar Khan tune to the note that he tuned to? And he asked Ali Akbar Khan that, and he says, because that's the note that I hear sort of ever-present, all the time.
Hmm.
That frequency was 268.8 hertz, which is in the D-flat realm, and you could call it C-sharp, because most of Indian classical music centers around C-sharps. So that's a D-flat / C-sharp, two different names you could call it that. But anyway, that's the exact note, and when you take the frequency of the Milky Way, from Edward Ostrander's research, is 4,303 hertz. And you octavize that down, just divide it by two a bunch of times, you get 268.9375 hertz. Well, 268 isn't common with Ali Akbar Khan's note, and his is 0.8, and the Milky Way is 0.9375.
Hmm.
I mean, there are some people that could barely tell the difference between those two frequencies because they're so close together.
Hmm.
So in a sense, I'm saying, you know, maybe Ali Akbar Khan is hearing the essential frequency emanating out of the Milky Way.
Hmm.
And a lot of the ancients talk about that. That's what the G and the Mayan thing is all about, the center of the Milky Way. in our galaxy, and that's where they go through their meditations and traveling in black holes, and or you might say vortexes, if you don't use that word. But that's where supposedly they went to get all their information. They learned how to go into that place in the center of the galaxy, look into the future and look into the nature of reality, and come back out and apply it to their civilization.
Wonderful. Well, I have a question. We have to go, Randy, and I just hate to end this, so will you come back?
I would love it. Thank you for having me be the first person in this new segment of your show,
Randy. Oh, this is just a very rich and delightful experience, Randy. I'm so happy that you had time to come on. And your website, again, is www.universalsong.com.
.net.
That's where I made the mistake.
Sometime we'll talk about the nature and the masters of the net and what the net means.
Oh, that'd be great.
That's a big topic.
We're going to have you back on soon. And, again, thank you ever so.
Okay, and lots of love to all the listeners. And I hope that there's be something that I talked about that they'll find useful in their life and that they can make the life on Earth better because of something that we're talking about.
Wonderful. And much love to all of you. Thank you for listening. And I'll see you Thursday night with Jackie at 8 o'clock. And next Tuesday on Radiance by Design, followed by Paradigm Shifters. I don't know who my next week's guest is, but I'll let you know. Much love and many blessings. And we'll end with one of Randy's pieces.